From the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world, from wherever the beautiful game is played, this is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Yes, hello folks. Welcome to the original Beyond the Pitch on the NBC Sports Podcast platform. I'm Phil Brown, as always, joined with my two regulars here, Martin and Danny Higginbotham, of course, to cover so much this episode. We've got to look back at the games that took place this weekend. We'll take a look ahead to the big game this weekend, Spurs-Chelsea, the first Premier League game to be held at Wembley. We're looking forward to that. First of all, how's things, boys?
All good, my end. How about you, boys?
Likewise, very good, Phil. He's had a good start to the week.
Yes, it's been a good week for both me and Martin, of course, big United fans. So here to get Danny's view on so many of the things that took place. First place I want to start will be Chelsea-Burnley. Bizarre game. I must admit, when I looked at the fixture, I thought Chelsea will be comfortable. I won it by a couple of goals. And they had a strange start. It's been a strange summer for Chelsea. Bizarre transfer dealings. They've let more go than what they've brought in. Arguably let better players leave than what they brought in. For a team that's got Champions League football this season, Conte doesn't look a happy man. If you look back at Mourinho and Ancelotti, both of them were sacked after the season they won the league. This has a sense that something isn't right at Stamford Bridge and there's tension between Conte and the board. Danny, I'll start with you first, mate. What did you make of what you saw at Stamford Bridge this weekend?
I think first and foremost, Chelsea are weaker than what they were last season. Obviously, Hazard's out injured. Diego Costa, his time has definitely come to an end there. And, you know, they've let Matic go to one of their main rivals. Obviously, we'll get onto him later. But what I thought was really interesting, and this actually does involve Matic, is that the way that Chelsea set up, and we saw it a little bit at the start of last season, I thought, for Chelsea, when they just took a little bit to get into their stride. If it was Matic and Kante that played, Kante was the one that was the aggressor. And he was the one that would push forward. Now, that was okay, eventually, because you got Matic as a defensive midfielder. What Burnley did really well and what Chelsea did really badly last week, I thought, was that Kante was the man that was on the front foot and that two in front of the back three. So what would happen is he'd go hunting for the ball, he'd go looking for the ball as much as he could to try and not allow Burnley to settle in possession. And Burnley were very clever. They just kept going over Kante's head continuously. That meant the only defensive protection was Fabregas. And I'm not being disrespectful, that's not one of Fabregas' strongest points. And I just think that, okay, the back three, obviously Cahill got sent off as well, and it probably had a lot to do with the result, but just the dynamics of the way that they worked. So that was defensively where there was an issue. But then I thought, going forward, the players were getting in each other's way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they've got Morata that's come in. He will probably be seen more as a like-for-like with Costa. But what was happening with Batshuayi, who was playing? He always wanted to stretch the game. Whereas last season, what we saw a front three playing very narrow, Diego Costa dropping in, Willian, Pedro, Hazard, whoever it was, then stretching the game, dragging the centre-backs backwards, getting into the space behind them, and then making the two full-backs have to play narrow because of the simple fact that the two centre-backs were overrun. That created space then for the two wing-backs to get in, and they scored goals and they created a lot of assists. What happened against Burnley was that Batshuayi was stretching the game, so there was no space in behind for the players behind Batshuayi to get into. So they inevitably went into the wide areas. They started getting in the way of the two wing backs, and they just looked so dysfunctioned. It just wasn't working at all. And I think you've got to say, okay, you know, Chelsea had a bit of a fight back, but Burnley fully deserved the win.
What do you make of it, Martin?
Yeah, I'm in agreement there. It's just an interesting setup, man. Look, Burnley are a tough team to play again. I think Sean Dyche doesn't really get the credit he deserves. I think he's a cracking manager and potentially a future future England manager in my eyes. He really gets his teams set up well. He has a plan. His players seem to stick to the plan. And by bypassing that midfield and targeting their back three, you know, I'm still not sold on David Luiz as a defender. Mm. You know, look. Decent going forward, certainly hits a great dead ball, loves to get in forward positions, but defensively speaking, leaves a lot to be desired for me and leaves him a little bit vulnerable. So like you say, bypassing Kante, bypassing that midfield from Burnley, allowed them to really get at Chelsea. And we've seen now that the types of problems that Chelsea are going to have. just inconceivable to me that Matic was allowed to go. Now, obviously, Matic behind the scenes there has really, really pushed for this move. I can only imagine that that's the reason they let him go. And at 40 million, it's looking like an absolute steal in today's ridiculous market, that is. You know, Matic, 29, more, maybe to the back end of his prime, but you know, just a wonderful footballer who had so much protection and allows players to play around him. That you kind of see what you take out of the game when, you know when he's not there, and Kante's not allowed to do the same job he's allowed to when Matic is there. Rather like Paul Pogba, as Danny said there, you know, Fabregas doesn't want to defend. You know, he wants the ball in front of him, and he wants to go forward. If you can bypass him, if you can get him behind and get him backtracking, just like Pogba, you know, they become very, very average and become vulnerable.
One of the things that I noticed was Burnley had a lot of space, especially out wide, put the ball in. Mm-hmm. They had acres. Every time someone went wide, they threw the ball into Sam Vokes. They had enormous space. And obviously the centre-back pairing between Luiz and Rudiger, there was enormous space in between them. And Sam Vokes was exploiting it every single time. Why were they having so much space, Danny?
I think if you look at Chelsea last season, more often than not in Premier League games, they were the dominant team. So when the opposition got the ball back, Chelsea had that many players forward that they could go and press and not allow the opposition to settle. What I thought happened a lot of the time in the weekend against Burnley was, okay, you know, you talk about Chelsea having a lot of the play and what have you. But what Burnley did, and I thought they did it very well, was that they gambled. They made sure that Vokes didn't get isolated. So they had midfield runners getting up to him. So Chelsea, when they did lose the ball, when the turnover happened, you know, it wasn't just a hurried clearance from Burnley. It was a clearance, but there was players getting up quickly to support Vokes. That's when we talk about Kante again, because he's the one. We saw it a lot at the start of last season. Then he calmed down a little bit because he was very erratic early on, running around everywhere, and then he just got better and better as the season went on. I wouldn't want him to be the one that's ratting around if it's him and Fabregas. I want Fabregas higher up the pitch. Mm-hmm. But because they had it the other way round, it was easy for Burnley, when they did get the ball back, to gamble a little bit, have players supporting Vokes, and therefore that's what made the centre-back position look very vulnerable. I think that Chelsea looked all over the place. I think what we saw with Chelsea last season, what made them so successful, was attacking with a five and defending with a five at times. And they just looked all over the place as though their system had been found out. And the sooner they sort the defensive side of things out, the defensive midfield out, the better. Obviously, they got Bakayoko, who's got to come in. But let's not forget as well, this weekend you got Fabregas suspended, you got Cahill suspended. Does that mean, if Bakayoko isn't, you know, ready to play, does that mean that David Luiz goes into that central midfield position?
Do you not think there was an air of arrogance about the performance from Chelsea, though? I mean, almost an expectance that Burnley were going to go there, sit back and kind of wait for something to happen. But something I've seen in Sean Dyche is the fact he's not just going to sit back and let something happen. His teams are going to have a plan. That, you know, when they can, they're going to have a go. And I tell you, you don't want to put the ball in the box with Sean Vokes. I mean, there's one outcome. The boy can score goals in the box. Yeah. You sling the ball in there, he's going to go up there and he's going to win it. He's done it in a European Championships, you know, for Wales. It was some level of arrogance for me there. And maybe it was on Conte. Maybe it was on the players they were missing. And maybe, you know, Sean Dyche has really done his homework there. And that formation was found out a little bit.
I was fortunate enough to interview Sean Dyche towards the end of last season when they got safe. And I asked him, that was one of the first questions I asked him. I said, you know, you are more than likely going to have to try and, you know, build a little bit on your away form because it's not been fantastic. And he said, we know our form at Turf Moor is very good and we know we need to get more points away from home. But there's been so many games where we've been in the game. I did Everton Burnley last season. I don't know whether it ended up 3-0 or 3-1, something along them lines. And Burnley should have won the game. And it was chances that was missed. So I think it was a little bit deceiving, the form, especially towards the end of the season away from home, where you're thinking to yourself, wow, another defeat for Burnley away. They were very close. Now, as for Chelsea, everybody knows the style that Conte wants to play now. And you've got to say that at its best, it showed last season that it was outstanding. But in order to be able to play that system, you have to have the correct players to be able to play that game. Now, he has lost two key players from that system. forget about Hazard. Obviously, he's out injured. He's not lost indefinitely. We don't know what's going to happen with him. But when you lose a centre forward in Diego Costa that would drag centre halves into areas that they didn't want to go, which would then create space for the two players either side of him and even the wing backs, and also Matic, who gives you that defensive balance so Kante can go looking for the ball and go hunting the ball so the opposition can't sit and relax and get a good control of possession, then that's a big problem, because you've changed it all of a sudden. You've swapped, as of last week from the game, you swapped Costa for Batshuayi, completely different players, and you swapped Matic for Fabregas, completely different players. So you can't play the same way and expect the same results if you've got two completely different players playing in that system.
Is Conte getting found out then? Because clearly, I mean, if reports were to be believed, and Conte did get this so-called text in June from Conte, Costa, if Costa got it from Conte, sorry. You know, if he was looking to replace a player who scored 20 league goals for him, and was one of the main reasons they won the title, and then they've gone on to release Matic to one of their major rivals for 40 million, a player who's won three titles in 4 years across two countries. A winner, a player that knows what it takes to win Premier League titles and to win league titles. You know, is Conte getting found out? Then why replace two of your major components to go clearly with a different style and a completely different type of player to what you're looking to replace? It's just really bizarre, and just stinks of this Chelsea manager second season syndrome.
It's an interesting one, because if, first of all, you know, if what has supposedly happened between him and Costa with a text messaging has happened, then it's completely wrong. But take that out of the equation. The fact that he's told Diego Costa, or supposedly told Diego Costa, that he has no future at Chelsea, and obviously he's allowed Matic to go, that's fine, because a manager has the right to do whatever he wants to do, but don't do it until you've replaced him. Yeah. Now, what I found really interesting, and it's something that we talked about, I think, on one of the last shows that we did towards the end of last season, when everybody was talking about Lukaku to Chelsea, we said Lukaku doesn't suit Chelsea.
Yep, nope.
He scores goals, but he's not the player that Chelsea need. Chelsea need, and we said at the time as well, Chelsea need the Morata type, the player that's going to drop deep. That's what you need. Now, that's what they've got him. They need to get him in the team as soon as possible, because the whole dynamics are going to have to change otherwise, and they need to get Bakayoko if he's going to be fit enough. They need to get him in the team as soon as possible. So my only thinking can be that, obviously, I would guarantee that Conte's not happy with the fact that he's not been able to sign other players, but I probably think that he's looked at Costa and thought Morata's an upgrade on him, and I think he's probably looked at Matic and thought Bakayoko is an upgrade on him. Now, if that's the case, then that's fair enough, and time will tell when you get them two players on the pitch. But to actually probably, you know, separate a player like Diego Costa before he'd actually got that player in Morata, you're asking for trouble, and then
certainly a gamble.
and then allowing Matic, one thing, you allow Matic to go, that's fair enough, but you don't let him go to one of your main domestic rivals. That's madness.
Well, that and, you know, for all we know, Bakayoko might be the real deal and might come in and take the Premier League by storm, but as we know, coming playing in the Premier League, there's absolutely no guarantees, and you've tried to replace a proven winner and a Premier League winner with somebody who's never played in the league. Huge, huge gamble.
Five of their 18-man squad had two appearances between them. That's not a Conte squad. I'm not going to say what's going to happen is exactly what happened with Mourinho in the second season, where you've got a complete collapse, but I get the feeling things could unravel at Chelsea very, very quickly. We'll see what happens. We're going to have to move on.
That's 14 managers in 14 years.
I know. It's mad. 14
managers in 14. I mean, given, right? You Ray Wilkins and who's the other one? Is it Steve Holland? I think only in for a couple of days. But still, 14 managers in 14 years.
And it almost seems to be always the same problem with Chelsea. It comes down to recruitment. Mourinho didn't get the players he wanted in the second season. For goodness sake, you win the league. Surely you have to support a manager that wins the league. We'll see what happens.
Phil, last one and then to move on. I ask you the pair of you really quickly. And this ain't being disrespectful to any of the Chelsea players, because they've got a fantastic squad. They fully deserved to win the Premier League last year. Yep. Of the 11 usual starters, because, you know, he picked the same team as much as possible as he could last season, how many of them at 11 overachieved? How many of them 11 played above themselves?
Well, I would say Alonso played above himself. I would say
Azpilicueta.
Azpilicueta. I would say Luis. David Luis.
Yeah. Moses, definitely.
Victor Moses, Cahill. Very much. Yeah.
They were phenomenal.
Yeah.
So them seasons come along very rarely where everyone ticks at the same time. So what you need to do then for the next season, because you know people are going to have ups and downs, you need to go and get enough players in. And for me, listen, I don't know how it goes, and I hope it doesn't happen, because you don't want to see managers leave a football club. But I would not be surprised to see Conte at some point in the quite near future, especially after the transfer window, if he's not been able to get in the players that he wants and he's lost players, maybe, you know, not be manager of Chelsea within two or three months.
I agree.
They go to Spurs this weekend, don't they? Martin, first game ever in the Premier League at Wembley. Tottenham don't exactly have a brilliant record at Wembley. I think they had one win in Fiverr last season, of course, in the Champions League. Didn't particularly look very good there. They also lost in the Cup semi-final there to Chelsea last season, largely down to squad depth. Because if you look in that game, Conte brought on Costa and Hazard, which changed the game. Take a look at Tottenham now. They haven't strengthened this summer. It sends a horrible message to the players that are already there. Danny Rose has already spoken out. You have your own opinion on whether that was right or not. But it suggests there's a big problem at Tottenham. And obviously we know they have to pay for a stadium, but this isn't the wage structure is not new. So they're going to Wembley. They don't have it's not a ground that is conducive to the way Tottenham play football. They haven't strengthened. They played a kid at right back this weekend that they got away with because Trippier was injured, who played quite well, to be fair.
Very well.
Danny, I'll throw to you first, and then Martin, go ahead, jump in, mate. Are you concerned about Tottenham this year? I mean, we've talked about the problems with Wembley, but why aren't they strengthening?
Well, we touched on it last week. I think the problem that they have, and I think the club have backed themselves into a corner, is that everybody talks about, well, you know, okay, well, they do need a marquee signing, they need to get players. We've seen now how crazy the transfer market's gone. We've seen how much players are costing. We've seen the wages that are coming in. I don't think it would be a problem for Tottenham. I think they could quite easily, even though what they're doing, the new stadium and everything, they could probably go out and buy a player for £50 million. That is not the issue. The issue is a £50 million player these days is probably going to want 250 grand wages. So therefore, it's been well documented, and obviously, you know, Danny Rose has come out and spoken about it, that a lot of them players will be underpaid when you compare them to other Premier League teams. I'm on about other Premier League teams that probably didn't even make the top 10, or if they did, were probably just there by the skin of their teeth. So therefore, the problems that you get is if you go and sign a player for that amount of money that can make a difference for you, you're going to have to give new contracts to five or six players. Now, that is a problem, and that is where Tottenham have really backed themselves into a corner. Do I think it's been a disaster for them because Walker's gone and they haven't brought anybody in? Not at the moment, because when I look at some of the business that the teams around them have done so far and the players that have gone from other teams around them, Chelsea being a prime example, they are one of, I'd probably say, potentially, come the end of the transfer window, they're going to be one of four teams out of the top six that could arguably seem to be weaker than last season by August the 31st. Yeah. Now then, is it such a big issue then? For me, the biggest issue is going to be Wembley. It's going to be how they go about things there. I think the fact of Walker's gone, if Kyle Walker goes on to have a fantastic season, he's had a great start to season. If Manchester City win the league, if they go really far into the Champions League, of course there's going to be admiring eyes from Tottenham players that will be looking and thinking, wow, because they'll be friends and they'll roughly know what players are earning. But these players, you know, I don't think there would be a talk about a lack of wages if Tottenham had managed to keep Walker and maybe added a couple, because they're a team that was seen as going places. But these players, they know, lads at Tottenham, they could probably go to other places and double their wages. But their biggest thing will be is, can we win silverware at Tottenham Hotspur? And if the answer's no, then that's when I think that they'll start to get itchy feet and want to move on. And let's not forget, not just the players, Pochettino as well, because he will be in demand as well.
Martin?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can only imagine that Poch has got a couple of signings up his sleeve here. It's going to come in the next couple of weeks, but I highly doubt it being marquee signings. I think we're looking at squad players coming in, trying to add to the depth that they're clearly going to need on that bigger Wembley pitch. As Danny said, we know that style they play is not conducive to that size pitch, certainly to adapt to it in such a short period of time. I can only imagine he's got a couple up his sleeve, because they're very, very close here to a couple of injuries and really, really beginning to struggle. However, they're going to need a little bit of luck. But if they stay healthy, you know, they've got the X factor there in Dele Alli again this weekend. Pops up when they need it. Harry Kane's actually lucky man to still be on the pitch, if you ask me. I thought he was pretty lucky to get away with that tackle. But, you know, they've got the X factor in Dele Alli, who can win a game on his own. That piece of magic. And yeah, they were. I don't think Tottenham were great. I don't think Newcastle were great. But clearly the sending off had the big effect this weekend. But then, you know, Dele Alli pops up. But how long are you going to have to rely on that one player or him? And, you know, and Eriksen. I mean, are Barcelona going to come sniffing for Eriksen? Barcelona are in dire need, are in big trouble here, and they've got 200 million in their pocket, burning a hole in their pocket. They're not going to be able to sign these huge marquee players at Barcelona. So are they going to come looking for the likes of an Eriksen? Do they come looking for a Dele Alli? Mm-hmm. And at this point now, knowing Daniel Levy there, if Barcelona go and throw, if this Coutinho deal becomes out the window, do they throw 100 million and try and get Dele Alli? Mm-hmm. Are Spurs in a financial situation to turn that down?
I think the worrying thing is, and I never ever thought that I would ever say this, but the transfer market, wage and everything have gone crazy. If we look at the top player at Tottenham, maybe, I don't know, what would it be? Maybe 100,000, something like that?
I don't even think it's that, Danny.
Okay, so let's just put a week. Yeah, let's say it's 80,000. This, it actually scares me to say it. How good a player do you get for 80 grand a week?
I know. When you get Arnautovic going to West Ham for more than that.
So it's crazy. So in order for Tottenham, like Martin's just said, I don't think they can go and get any marquee signings, because of the simple fact, marquee signings that are game changers, that make a difference, that can take a team from finishing top four to actually winning the league, you're not getting them from less than 200 grand a week. It's a crazy thing to say, but it's the truth. Dele Alli, for example, if he's on 80 grand a week, or Harry Kane 90 grand a week, whatever they're on, that in today's market is unbelievable, especially when there'll be a number of players playing probably in, you know, from 8th downwards, maybe to 12th or 13th, that are probably on the same money. So what are you actually going to get if you are staying within the strict wages? I tell you what, you're not going to get anybody that's going to make a difference to Tottenham.
Well, and it's all well and good until a couple of shaky results, though, isn't it? And that's when it gets brought up then, and the doubt starts creeping in. And you know, it's a precarious position they're in. 1-11 right now. Even missing Kyle Walker, when Trippier comes back, 1-11, you still fancy him against anybody.
Couldn't agree more.
But that can change in the rough and tumble nature of the Premier League, and the rigors of the Premier League. You're not going to be able to roll out 1-11. They got very, very lucky last year, injury-wise. That's not going to happen back-to-back seasons. And they're going to have to bring in reinforcements. And the likes of Son, who can come in, I still don't think over a season you're going to get the productivity that he shows in them short bursts. But I'm worried for them. I really am. And I really do worry that the Barcelona's, and that it's very, very difficult to turn them down, and someone like Levy might snap their hands off if they come with that same bid they come for Coutinho. I think, by the way, you're getting a better player in Dele Alli than you are in Coutinho, by the way.
It's such a shame for Tottenham when you look at it, because last year was their year, because if we looked at Tottenham's 1-11, like Martin's just said, the majority of them would get into any of the top four teams.
I think they've got the best centre back pairing in the league, in my opinion.
Yeah, Danny Rose
would.
I'd take him at Old Trafford in a heartbeat.
Would walk United, City, Chelsea, no problems. I think
Wanyama
would improve almost any top team. Dyer, who United wanted, would walk into United's team if they hadn't got Matic. Dele Alli, we know, would walk. To me, Dele Alli, maybe with the exception of Real Madrid, would improve every team in the world. Harry Kane, one of the top touch strikers in the world. They have that first 11 there that can compete with anybody. It's just when you start getting down past that first 11, as we saw once Trippier got injured, they're throwing in kids again. And look, I just think Dele Alli
he hasn't quite run off in the sunset yet, but he's pulled the saddle out of the barn by the old only God knows the future Cristiano Ronaldo stuff, right? Yeah, and when that starts happening, that's laying the foundations for, do you know what? And Tottenham players ask the same questions that Alexis Sanchez is asking himself at Arsenal, because there comes a point in your career when you ask, look, I can get the money wherever I go. That's not the problem. The problem is, what do I win? Where's my trophies? What? Because, you know, the money's always going to be there for top players. That's not the issue. The issue is, what do you win? And Tottenham's going to have to win something to prove to these players that they're at the right football club. And I think there's, with not signing players this summer, and you're right, Danny, they're in a bit of a pickle here, because you have to break a wage structure.
I know it's, we talk about the pros and they want to go and win stuff, and the money isn't the key factor, but it's a difference if we're talking about going from a wage from 40-50 grand to 80 grand. But you're talking about a Dele Alli or a Harry Kane who could potentially triple their wages from 80-90 to 250-270, £300,000 a week. So that's gotta be in their mind as well.
Wages, image rights. Think about what Harry Kane would become if he went to a top club. What Dele Alli would become. These players will become, all of a sudden, become brands, become superstars. It's worth so much more than just their wages.
It's crazy. I know we talk about football and the game, and we look at the money that Manchester United have paid on an individual. We look at Arsenal to a certain extent. We look at Chelsea, no doubt about it. We look at Manchester City, no doubt. I've had a look at it. Tottenham's record signing is Sissoko from Newcastle, £31.5 million. Now, that for me, their business that they've done, the players that they've brought in have been absolutely phenomenal. The prices that they've got some of the players for, the fact they've got some homegrown and they've brought younger players in and things like that. But I know you don't want to make it all about money, but to have a record signing being at £31.5 million, and he played last week, he's not realistically going to be in the team. You have to put the money in there. And I just think that Tottenham, the powers that be, have backed themselves so far into a corner now that I think that, unfortunately, last season was their peak. Because like Martin said, Martin hit the nail on the head. 1-11, they're a match for anybody in the Premier League. But all it needs is an injury or two, and you know it spells real trouble for them.
All right, folks, let's move on. Let's go to everybody's pet favourite team, Manchester City, who everybody thinks will win the league. Danny, they win at Brighton this weekend. I remember asking you a while ago, who did you think was going to be in trouble? And I may be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure you said Brighton, almost because of the way their pitch is. It's a brilliant pitch, it's a brilliant stadium, teams are going to love playing there.
Yeah.
And we saw they were dogged this weekend. City had too much class in the end. But I just want to paint the picture for the gap between what the haves and the have-nots in the Premier League. The players on Manchester City's bench cost more than what Brighton Stadium and training ground cost.
and it's an impressive stadium and training ground as well.
And I'm not including Mendy in this, by the way, who's not even fit. Right?
Yeah.
£207 million worth of talent on Manchester City's bench. £52 million in Mendy, who's not even fit yet. £230 million in the front 11. Does two things. First of all, did what you see this weekend. Martin, let you go first, mate. Did what you see this weekend, because both of you tipped Man City to win the league. Did what you see this weekend...
Whoa. I did not tip Man City to
win.
Oh, that's right. You're denied. That's right, Danny. I've totally slandered you there, and that is... ring your lawyer for damages. Seriously, Martin, I'll start with you. Since with what you saw this weekend, you still believe that's a City team that can win, that will win the league with what you saw. Obviously, it's the first game of the season, but
I'm not willing to change just yet. And as I said, a lot's going to depend this next couple of weeks and see who brings what in. But I'll tell you, City didn't look comfortable in their formation. To me, they look very predictable. They lacked actual out-and-out pace and width to begin with. And I don't think they were impressive at all. But they've got the quality. They're playing against a Brighton team, a newly promoted team, playing at home with a fantastic crowd behind them. The support and the atmosphere in that place was fantastic. They were always going to be up against it. Brighton gave everything they physically had. But, you know, the real quality really shone through in the end. Nothing to change on my mind. Nothing to write home about. I wasn't very impressed in the slightest with City. But City improved in the areas they needed to improve in the transfer window. That's why I tipped them. And I still think that you may see Alexis Sanchez added to that mix as well. So not willing to change my mind yet. I mean, obviously, my heart wants United to win it. But, you know, I think at this point, early in the season, I think it's going to be between the two Manchester clubs.
It was interesting. I was listening to an interview that Guardiola did after the game, and he was asked, you know, why did he leave the likes of Bernardo Silva, Sterling and Sané on the bench till so late? Because they did come on. And Martin, once again, you know, you said it, they injected more pace into the game. And he said, and I found myself agreeing with him, when you go to these new promoted teams, they're not going to attack you very frequently. They're going to sit back. They're going to be deep. So straight away, when that happens, you can forget Sané's pace and you can forget Sterling's pace straight away. What he wanted to do was to try and get a foothold in the game with the likes of, obviously, De Bruyne, Silva in particular, because they knew that it was going to be all about picking a pass. Then, as Brighton got a little bit tired and a little bit ragged, then bring the pace of the likes of Sterling and Sané on. So from that point of view, I think he got it spot on. From when I look at Manchester City, I look at the team and I think that now the reason Guardiola, I think, has a little bit of a head start this season is because he did his business very quickly, knew what he wanted, got rid of the players that he wanted to get rid of and brought the players in. He has a style of playing. I thought that Danilo looked a little bit out of touch, you know, being a right foot playing on that left didn't give any width. My major concern will be when I look at the team, I think defensively, if you keep Kompany fit, he can be the difference between finishing third and actually winning the league.
Still one of the best in the world.
Yes, without doubt. Going forward, fantastic. My only question mark is that space that space in front of the back three where Fernandinho at the moment is holding the four. Do I feel as though he has enough defensive mentality to do it all on his own, or would I think that maybe two would be better in there? Personally, yes, I think two would be better for something that we've talked about before, is in terms of teams playing counter-attack against Manchester City. As for Brighton, it is something we touched on last week. It's a beautiful stadium to go to. You don't make it ugly. You're not going to beat the likes of Man City and the top teams, or most teams in the Premier League, at their own game. So that's a difficult thing for Brighton. But Brighton, Chris Hughton will have gone into that game. They're all bonus points.
Absolutely.
Brighton are in a league of their own, which is probably the bottom six or seven, and that's a league they'll concentrate on. Any points that they get off the likes of Manchester City, Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal, so on, are bonus points. Yeah. So it's not a major issue for them. But as for Manchester City,
their fate's not determined.
No, it will not keep them up or send them down. What I am looking forward to is the Monday night game. Manchester City versus Everton. That's going to be a lot sterner test. Unfortunate, I'm working on that game. I'm really looking forward to it. Then we'll see more of a test then of Manchester City and how they are adapting to the way that Guardiola plays. And let's give Guardiola a little bit of credit as well, because I think a lot of managers are very stubborn, stick to the ways that they want to play. Guardiola's mixed things up a little bit. We saw him at Barcelona in particular, and at times at Bayern, he was very much the Barcelona way, the 4-3-3 type way, but he's mixed things up, and he's probably realised that in the Premier League, the game is so fast that you can be so open to the counter-attack that, you know, they've given themselves three centre-halves and maybe that little bit of extra cover.
For Guardiola, I mean, he's got to really hope that defensively they do perform. And I think I'm right in saying that they have three of the five most expensive defenders in history,
and the second most expensive goalkeeper in history. Question for you both. This is probably a bit of United and City question, and answer it honestly, is in terms of, you know, forget about Manchester United and things like that. Do you think that Guardiola gets away with things a little bit? Listen, I think he's one of the best managers in the world. I really do. But do you think he probably has a little bit less criticism because of who's manager of the red half of Manchester?
Yeah, well, first of all, Man United are held to a much higher standard than Manchester City. I think if Guardiola was coach of Manchester United, he'd be getting the Mourinho-type scrutiny. You know, City have no past barometer to be held against. United are always held against Ferguson's barometer, Matt Busby's barometer. City don't have that. So I think United are held to a much higher standard, and that's just the consequences of success. So, yes,
well,
he does, but the money spent as well? Of course, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, the expectation that United will play youth is ingrained in their culture. You know, Van Gaal was criticised despite giving six youth team players their debut. Mourinho's been criticised despite sticking with youth. You know, Guardiola's completely abandoned it and said, no, I'm here to win. I'm not here to give young
kids. Well, that's it. I mean,
And I don't blame him, to be honest.
No, I mean, he knows he's got to win now. Case in point, Iheanacho. I mean, Iheanacho's been shipped off and he was supposed to be the next big thing. I mean, it's...
But based on that then, right, so if we look at both the clubs, if Manchester City finish second in the Premier League and get to the quarterfinals of the Champions League and don't get any further, will that be considered more of a failure than if United did that? Because I think the expectation levels are still greater on Manchester City this season than they are on Manchester United, probably because Manchester City were closer to the finished article than Manchester United were. I believe Manchester United can win the Premier League. I've said that from the signs that they've made. I do believe that they'll bring another one in. And I think that they can go very far in the Champions League. But I still believe that it would be a greater failure with the money that's been spent at Manchester City, the manager that they have in there and how close he feels that he is now. I think it would be a greater disappointment or a greater surprise if Manchester City were to not win the league rather than Manchester United.
You're talking about a Guardiola, really, a man in charge who's not failed.
Yeah.
Look, you can say he's a checkbook manager. You can say, you can say he's been gifted great teams. All that goes out the window. End of the day, he's not failed. Mm-hmm. He's won at every 100%. Single. You know what I mean? So there is that added bit of pressure. We know Jose's had his difficulties. Obviously, that's at Chelsea and so on. So he's been fired a couple of times. He's been released a couple of times. He's a little bit more, touchy in press conferences. Pep's a little bit more of the golden child, but there is that added pressure with Pep in charge. I think he's under a lot of pressure to deliver this year.
Yeah,
I think they're both out of excuses, in my opinion. I think they've both had the season to get their teams right, I think this season they'll both be held to a much higher standard and expect huge improvement. But I would say that man for man, United are behind City in terms of their squad, but they're catching up, and I think Mourinho's getting a lot closer, and. But we'll see what happens. Signings don't guarantee success, and we don't know how they're going to settle in. Quick answer from both of you. Martin, Johnny Evans to Man City.
Oof.
Does he solve any problems for them?
I don't think so. I think Johnny Evans was underrated. I think he got an awful lot of grief. He was fantastic for United, or a couple of great seasons at United. I don't think, other than depth, that he brings anything that City don't already have.
Danny, quick answer, mate.
I'd have to disagree. I think that if Manchester City would sign him, I played with Johnny when he was a younger lad, and I think he's a fantastic player. He's probably at his peak now. And I look at the back three of Manchester City against Brighton. Is he good enough to replace Otamendi on the left-hand side? In my opinion, yes. So I think he would be a very good signing for him. I think what Guardiola likes about him as well, Johnny Evans is one of the best players that I've seen with the ball at the feet from a defender's point of view, and he can comfortably play on the left as well. So it'd be interesting to see. And if City want him, they will get him. Simple as that.
That is probably the attraction. He is so comfortable on the ball.
That's
clearly the attraction, because if we're going on out and out defending, he wasn't that comfortable. Well, they wouldn't go anywhere near him.
All right, gotta move on quickly. Liverpool. I want to talk about Liverpool quickly, boys, because. This weekend, I asked myself, what do they work on over the summer? Because if the one thing we knew about Liverpool last season was they were vulnerable at set pieces with zonal marking. Once again, horrible defender from the first goal from a corner. And defensively, they were a mess. They got a bit unlucky with an offside goal in the last minute of the game. Positives, they're brilliant going forward. Mane, Salah, very dangerous. But Claire de Coutinho hangs over them. Did a brilliant result in midweek away to Hoffenheim. Daniel, I'll go you first, mate. Can Liverpool win the league? Or no, I wouldn't say win the league. Can Liverpool improve dramatically with a zonal marking and the way they play? Because to me, they look wide open at the back.
Hey, I'll make it easy for you. No.
Well, Johnny, you're a centre back. You're a central defender. Talk to me about zonal marking and tell me about Liverpool's defence.
I cannot stand it. Right, I tell you what to do. This will go for, obviously I know where Martin stands with the zonal marking. This goes for you two, for the games this weekend, and any of the listeners as well. Do yourselves a favour. Watch a team zonal marking and watch a team that marks from corners. Watch the reaction when a team concedes who plays zonal marking.
They look around.
And watch the...
Everyone looks at each other.
Yeah, it was your fault. It wasn't my fault.
Yep. Exactly. Pass the ball. You then watch a team who concedes a goal from marking. Only one person to blame.
Yeah.
There's only one person to blame. Now, if you have... We've talked about this before. Generations now. There's not very many communicators now in football. It's just the way that football is now. So... zonal, it has to be talking about passing on players. The zonal, you mark him or he's coming into your space. If you're marking, you have your individual player to mark. I understand that some managers may say, well, you know what, we've got a player that's a little bit likely to pull a shirt, and we know that referees are watching that. Well, you know what you do? Tell him he's not marking anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Have him as a zonal man and say, okay, you're a threat. You're a threat to us, actually, for giving a penalty away. So what I want you to do, I want you to stand just near the far post, as the ball's put in, have a free run, go and win the ball. You're not marking anybody. Because for me, zonal is a difficult one. First of all, if I'm 6 foot and there's a 6 foot three player marking me, I know that I can outjump him because I've got a run on him, because he isn't going to come outside the box with me. He's not going to do anything. You can move players around. And for me, it's a big issue. It's a big no-no. As in terms of Liverpool, I still think that, you know, I've said it before on a standby, Manchester United will be able to do it at times if they need to with the likes of Carrick. Liverpool are still in need of two defensive midfielders. We saw Watford scored a goal, I think, from a counter-attack, or they had a counter-attack that led to a corner that they scored from. So Liverpool going forward, absolutely outstanding, fantastic. Do I see them keeping multiple clean sheets, loads of clean sheets, you know, every game or every other game? Very unlikely. And as... you know, Sir Alex Ferguson has said, all great teams are built on a great defence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, you just can't win. I mean, the goalkeeping is still an issue. Centre half is still an issue. Holding midfield is still an issue. They don't have enough. They just, quite simply, don't have enough to mount a serious challenge in my book. And, you know, it's the same problems arising again. I get away from that zonal marking. The amount of goals they're conceding from set pieces, whether it be corner kicks, whether it be deep free kicks, even long free kicks, you know, that they're winning the second ball on. It's deja vu all over again, isn't it?
They sell Coutinho, are they a selling club?
If he goes to Real Madrid or Barcelona, no.
Because yeah, I think they're an exception to the rule, aren't they?
Saw that with Manchester United, with Ronaldo. We've seen it before with Liverpool, with Suarez. I think... if you start selling your top players to your domestic rivals and other teams in Europe, other than Barcelona and Real Madrid, then yes, you'd be seen as a selling club. But you know, you cannot expect these players that play over here, if they get the call from Real Madrid or Barcelona, whether they're English or not, to not want to go, because the history that's steeped in them, the football, the players that they've got at them football clubs. So for me, no, it wouldn't make me think they're selling club. If they sold him to a domestic rival, a United or a City or something, then yes, I'd go, hang on a second, what are you doing? But no, Barcelona and Real Madrid, I don't count them. So I think any player would go to them. For
yeah, whether you like it or not, it's still seen as the pinnacle of club football of now, isn't it? And you know, it's an unfortunate. But if I'm Liverpool right now, you know, they've gone over 100 million. Is he 100 million? If Neymar was, well, take the Neymar deal out of it, are you still looking at 120 million for Coutinho? I don't think so. I think at this point now, look, if they're saying, okay, we'll hold on for a year, play for us for a year, I'll tell you what, anything can happen in a year. Those injury might happen in a year. That 120 million might not be there to spend next year.
No,
if I'm Liverpool right now, I'm cashing in. It's inevitable. It's going to happen, whether it be now, whether it be January, whether it be.
So you think he leaves, Martin?
I think he leaves.
Danny?
I think he leaves, and I think there's two things, because a lot of people have said, oh well, why don't they just say to Coutinho, you know, give us a year and then you can go next year. No disrespect to Coutinho, but he isn't a Ronaldo.
No,
he's not a Galactico.
So Real this Madrid opportunity may now come around again.
They're not going to look. If they don't get him, they're not going to say, "Okay, we'll hold on for a year and we'll wait for you." They're going that money's going somewhere else, and that transfer may not be on the cards next year.
Yep. And there has to be a happy medium as well, because at some point, you know, this is where you start getting problems with the powers that be in the management, because the management will be saying, right, okay, this player doesn't want to play for us anymore, so we've got a good price now. I need you to sell this player because I need to reinvest before August the 31st. Whereas the powers that be might be saying, well, you know what, maybe we can get another 15, 20 million and that brings more money to the football club. Well, that's no good to Jurgen Klopp if he gets that on August the 30th.
Well, not only that, Danny, but I mean, if they're holding out for more money here, all they're doing is driving up the price of every other player they want to bring in anyway.
Exactly, because people know they've got money.
If they sell him for 100, if they sell him for 80 million, that 25, 30 million pound footballer they were going to bring in, maybe 25. If they sell him for 100, that 30 million pound footballer so all of a sudden becomes 50 million pounds.
Well, so Liverpool are doing it to Barcelona, aren't they? Because of Neymar.
Yeah. The profits are no different. You know?
Exactly.
All right, let's move on. Let's finish up with Manchester United, folks, because and then we'll get a quick comment from both of you on the transfer window and whether that's going to help clubs or not. Manchester United, fantastic performance this weekend, 4-0. All the positives United could have hoped for. Lukaku on the score sheet, Pogba on the score sheet, Martial on the score sheet. Brilliant game from Matic. Looked like a player United have been badly missing for a long time. Martin, start with you first, mate. What'd you make of that performance this weekend? Was it a statement?
Certainly a statement. You know, it's a type of game we were struggling last year and struggling to find that second goal and getting burned late in games. So to get that second goal and then kick on and really, you know, put the knife in and go for the throat and end up 4-0, clean sheet, debut goals for Rashford. Martial comes on and gets off the mark. We know he's a big confidence player, so that's going to bode well for him. And Paul Pogba hitting the back of the net instead of a crossbar or a post early in the season can only bode well. But the job Nemanja Matic did, I mean, and it's not just that sitting and protect. I mean, we saw him on the first goal, that overlap, he overlaps left. He's the highest man on the field for the first goal and sits in and protects when he needs to protect. We're actually getting a lot more footballer than I actually knew he was. I was very, very impressed. And like we said on the United show, mate, it's only West Ham, if you can say only West Ham, but you can only beat who's in front of you. First game of the season at Old Trafford, there was a different atmosphere I felt. The crowd were really up for it, an air of expectation, and a perfect way to start the season. And as we know, the first 5-6 fixtures have been pretty kind to United and really could make a statement and get a lot of points on the board early.
Well, one thing I'm going to throw out there now, and I believe Pogba will get double figures this year in the league, in the league alone.
Agree.
He'll get double figures. The dynamics have changed. Listen, I'm never, ever going to say one single bad word about Ibrahimovic because he was phenomenal last season. Did he probably slow the way that Manchester United played down? Yeah, he probably did do a little bit. Manchester United, something they haven't had for, what, 4 years maybe, is the ability to counter-attack.
Yep.
They've got it in abundance now. Because what you'll find is, and I believe that your likes of Pogba, I think he'll score 10 league goals, and I would probably say that 7 of them will probably be, at least, will be from outside the area. Because the problem that you've got when you're marking against the player like Lukaku, he stretches the game, so that means the defence drops. It means there's a huge gap between the midfield and the defence. And when you've got the willing running of Pogba and Mkhitaryan in particular with Mata, all right, getting involved a little bit as well, they're going to have so much space to either dictate or, as we saw last week, Pogba picking up the ball and finding the back of the net. So I loved it. Defensively, I thought it was very similar to last season. You know, you had Matic sitting instead of Carrick, but it was the front five that was so different. The dynamism about it as well. Lukaku, you know, he scored, I think, 95% of his goals in the last, all right, this is going into the fourth season now, entering the fourth season, 95% of his goals have been from inside the area. There will be plenty of crosses coming into the box because as a defender, if I was playing against quick players as a centre-half, I drop deep. The deeper you drop, the more narrow you become. I still feel like, what we said last week as well, they are, if they're not going to go along with Shaw, I still think the best purchase they could get is a left back before the end of the transfer window, because that is going to be key areas. The full backs are going to be like wingers, and they will do like the likes of Baines and Coleman did for Lukaku, who can give numerous assists during the season for him.
Yeah, I still think United will bring another one in. Go ahead, Martin. Sorry,
I don't think it went unnoticed by a lot of United fans too. Rashford, absolutely outstanding, has got to play more games than he sits, and the old 9 and 19 partnership is back in effect. The Cole and York,
yeah,
Rashford, Lukaku. Yeah, it's strange how that works.
it's brilliant. And do you know what as well? When for me, we've talking about Matic at length and how certain players in certain positions can bring out the best in others. Rashford playing off that left-hand side is crying out for a left-back.
Yeah,
a dominant attacking off. Because Rashford finds himself two against one a lot of the time. Imagine if he wanted to try Shaw again or a player like Rose, imagine Rose flying past Rashford. All of a sudden, Rashford's going to find himself one-on-one. And it happened for a time, and it was real shame because Shaw got injured, and he was probably United's best player at the time. It was no coincidence that Shaw got injured and the Memphis Depay didn't have a great time at Manchester United.
I was just going to say that.
Disappeared.
Depay's best form was when Shaw was playing.
That's
exactly right. That you made me think of that right away. That's a great point, Donny.
Well, it was the old Gary Neville and David Beckham.
Perfect, yeah.
For Martial to give Martial that freedom as well, so that you're not asking both. I think also to get Mkhitaryan in advanced areas where he's creating and not having them pick up the ball 20 yards inside his own half. You get Mkhitaryan, who had two assists at the weekend, in advanced areas, he's going to pick passes, he's going to pick defences apart. And I think you're absolutely right. Maybe there's one weakness at United that I see, it's on the left-hand side. I don't think Daley Blind or Rojo or anybody, or Shaw, from everything that's coming out of Old Trafford, United are badly want the left-back. Be interesting to see who ends up coming in. But I do think there'll be one more before the end of the season and or the end of the summer, and it'll be a left-sided player. So, but just a quick comment for both of you, Danny. Were you impressed when you look at what Matic did for United in releasing Pogba? We talked about that. Were you impressed with what you saw from that United team against? People say it's West Ham, but West Ham, you know, they spent a lot of money over the summer, and these are games. United drew against West Ham at home last season, 1-1, didn't put the game away. Were you impressed with everything that you saw there in that United team? Was it everything you expected it to be?
Yeah, definitely, because I think what you do see, in a prime example was last weekend. You can see a few shocks at the start of the season because players are just bedding in and what have you. And Manchester United, like you said, they had far too many draws at home last season. And let's not forget Burnley. Would you say that they're better than West Ham? Probably not. Would you say that Watford are better than West Ham? Probably not. But Burnley went to Chelsea and won, and Watford drew with Liverpool. So you can only beat, like you say, you can only beat the teams that are put in front of you, but you've still got to beat them. And sometimes when you play against the so-called lesser teams, they make it more difficult because they just want to sit in and be compact. And Manchester United did the job, and then they move on to the game this week against Swansea.
Okay. Martin Yenning, do you add me up before we move on?
Nope. All good.
All right, boys. Want to ask you both a quick question, because there's been discussions this week about ending the transfer window by the time the first game starts. We've seen a lot of managers complain about this, about players being unsettled. I think so many transfers take place after the first game of the season. And Donny, thought to you, obviously you're someone's played at this level. You've signed for different clubs. What do you think of this? Is this something that would put English clubs at a disadvantage? Because they're saying players could still leave to the continent.
Honestly, it's a waste of time.
Is it?
Because of that. Because, listen, the major transfers that we're talking about are players leaving the Premier League to go to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So unless other teams are going to abide by it within Europe, then what is the point of doing it? What are you doing? You're giving your own teams a disability. Because what happens, so say for example, Liverpool sold Coutinho in the next 4 to 5 days because they had no other option because the money was so good. Liverpool can't go out and buy any players. So unless it's the whole of Europe, then it's pointless. If it was the whole of Europe, you know what, I would agree with it. As a player, I never agreed with it. I was like, what's the problem? But now seeing things from a different perspective, doing what I'm doing, speaking to managers week in, week out, You can see that it's not right, because a manager will work all pre-season on a particular system where there may be a key player that makes that whole system work. All of a sudden, he can be sold, and then you're left with even nothing, or you've got to go out again. So for me, it's a good idea if all of Europe follows suit. If all of Europe doesn't follow suit, then please don't do it. Otherwise, all you're going to do is make English teams weaker.
Martin?
Yep, no, 100%. I took the words out of my mouth. I mean, it's I don't like the idea of being able to make transfers once the season started. I wish it did close. I wish there wasn't a winter transfer window. But it's got to be Europe-wide. It cannot be just a Premier League because we're putting ourselves at a disadvantage. But whatever you do, do not ask Ian Holloway about the transfer window.
I saw that rant.
Because if you've not seen that rant, you should look it up. It's absolutely
He's
fantastic.
Brilliant. He's a character.
He is a character.
Superb. Folks, there's so much we didn't get to talk about. This hour goes by quickly. Thanks to all of you who downloaded the show. Don't forget that Beyond the Pitch on NBC Sports podcast platform is on a completely separate feed on iTunes than what the Beyond the Pitch regular podcast is on. So thanks to all of you who download the show. Thanks to my two partners here, Danny and Martin. Thanks, boys, as always. We will catch you next week after all the games. Danny, you're doing the game Monday night, so I suppose we'll record this after that. So all the best, boys.
Cheers, lads. Thank you.
Cheers, lads.